You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 6th of January 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I want to look today at some of the problems that are caused by multiculturalism, the demographic problems, and what leads on from those demographic problems, which of course are all caused by the government's own immigration policy. And we're going to be looking at Germany, America, and Britain, if we have enough time here. And the first article I want to look at comes from Breitbart, and it's titled, Germany Facing Demographic Time Bomb from Syrian Chain Migration, Expert Warns. A leading immigration expert has warned that Germany is facing a demographic time bomb if it allows the massive influx of alleged refugees from Syria to become citizens, as they will then be enabled to bring their family members to the country. Of course, this is not just a problem that's limited to Germany. The same problem occurs in all white countries. Once non-whites are given citizenship, they have the right to bring their family in. The same thing happens in Britain. In fact, in Britain, they don't actually have to become a citizen. If you have a visa with which to go to a British university and you're a non-British citizen, you're also allowed to bring your family in. It's actually called a family visa. So you'll be able to bring in your cousins and your uncles and your aunts, and your entire family can come into the country as well, all just on one visa. So when you look at the number of visas issued for the universities, that's not the actual number of people that will be coming in on that visa, because it's a family visa that is issued. Why, if you happen to be a student from Africa, you have to have your family there at university, I don't quite understand. When white people go to university, they get away from their family and they stop living with their family while they're at the university. A Dutch social scientist who is described as the top migration expert in Germany, Ruud Koopmans, has warned of the massive implications for the makeup of German society that chain migration represents. He argued that the government should consider whether it is in the interest of the country to grant citizenship to the near million supposed refugees from Syria. Imagine that. They've got a million alleged Syrian refugees in Germany, and they all came in under Angela Merkel, who just opened the borders wide to them, with the end result being the massive number of rapes that took place in Cologne that New Year's Eve that we were talking about just the other day. Now, he says here that the government should consider whether it is in the interest of the country. And I don't think they actually think about the country. What they think about is the economy. And they say, is it in the interests of the economy to expand the demographics, to expand the number of people in the country? And because of the way the economy is set up, it is in the interest of the economy to do that, because every one of those people is going to require money with which to live. Whether that money comes in from the government or whether that money comes in from working, that money still has to be created for them. And if that money has to be created for them, then that results in an inflation of the money supply, the amount of money that's in circulation. And then there's more money there in circulation for people to pay the interest on it, to pay the interest on the loans. I saw another news article that we won't actually be covering today, and it said that Britain's debt is three times its gross domestic product. So it's three times the amount of of money that it actually makes in a year. And that's Britain's debt. And the only way that we can have a debt like that is because all we do is pay the interest on it. And in order for there to be enough money in circulation for the interest to be paid and the principal, it has to continually expand. And I've said this before, but if you have somebody takes out a £10 loan and they're told they have to pay £11 back, and they're the first person to take out a loan, that there's £10 in circulation, that's their £10 that the bank gave them, that can circulate for a while and then it comes back to that person, they can pay back the £10, but they don't have that extra pound. It doesn't exist. The only way to get that extra pound to exist is if somebody else takes out another loan for £10. Then you've got £20 in circulation. So the first person can pay back his £10 principal. He can pay back his £1 interest. His debt is paid. But the second person then only has £9 in circulation. He needs to find an extra £2 to pay back his £11, or rather his £10 and his £1 interest. So you can see that it needs to keep increasing. And the way to keep that increasing, the only way you can increase it is by people taking out more loans in order to work or for businesses or for the government to take out money in the form of bonds, which is essentially a loan as well. And that's why you have this massive immigration. And we will always have this problem all the while that we have an economy and a banking system that is based upon usury. That's why it says in the Bible, you shall not lend upon usury to your brother, because this is the end result of it. You end up with everything being in the form of debt rather than everything being in the form of savings. And that's what they think about. They think about the economy. That's why people say, why don't you think of the country? Why don't you think of the harm that this mass immigration is causing? Why don't you think of all the young girls that have been raped, for instance? And the government will say, well, we do think about them, but we must have this immigration. And they'll think up of any excuse they can to tell you why they have to have it. But they won't actually tell you the real reason, which is because of the banking system that we have. Speaking to Cicero magazine, Koopmans said that while there has been positive steps made, such as scrapping the so-called turbo naturalisation of allowing migrants to apply for citizenship after just 3 years, the standard 5-year process remains in place and can still be considered a demographic time bomb in the long run. Well, of course it can. It just means that there's a 2-year gap there before they can actually get their citizenship. But this idea that it's called naturalisation, I mean, that's a horrible term to actually call it. I mean, all these people are being given is a piece of paper telling them that they are a German citizen. They're not actually becoming German ethnicity. They're just becoming German citizens. We have the same problem in Britain. The government and the mainstream media will deliberately confuse the two terms. Whether you are a British person or a British citizen, they'll confuse the two and claim that just because somebody's born in Britain, that means they're British. It doesn't. It means they're a British citizen. In order for them to actually be British, they would have to be descended from British ancestors. We have almost 1 million Syrian refugees in Germany. It is necessary to think about the consequences of this for the future. This 1 million people has a great overrepresentation of men. They will look for their partners mostly in the country of origin. Well, I hope so, because otherwise you're going to end up with lots of mixed-race kids without any actual heritage. This is extremely likely because in these countries, marriages usually take place within large families. In these societies, marriage is also an economic business between families, and the ticket to Europe is an important means of exchange, the Dutch social scientist said. So the fact that these people will have German citizenship will mean that they are more likely to be able to get themselves a wife from Syria, because it will be seen as adding value to the husband-to-be, the fact that he actually has German citizenship and his wife can then move to Germany. The migration expert said that if past is prologue, pointing to the influx of guest workers from Turkey and Morocco in the 1970s, which after obtaining citizenship en masse, saw their populations balloon 6- or 7-fold, the same could be expected by the Syrian cohort that arrived after former German Chancellor Angela Merkel opened the gates to migration in 2015, sparking the European migrant crisis. So they know what's going to happen. I mean, that's massive. Imagine that, the population expanding for 6 or 7 times. That happened in the 70s in Germany. I guess we're seeing the same problem now in Britain with the population massively expanding due to immigration. Thus, it could be expected that over the next 5 decades, the Syrian population could grow to a staggering 7 million if no action is taken, Koopmans warned. This, he noted, would also hold true for other migrant groups, such as those from Afghanistan, Iraq, and Somalia. So he's not talking about the whole population of Germany expanding 7 times, but just the Syrian population. So he's basing this on the fact that each one of those Syrian refugees will be able to bring in 7 other Syrians if they're given citizenship. And I guess it's exactly the same in Britain. Or every one of these non-white newcomers to our country, if they're given citizenship, they will be able to bring in 7 others just like them, which is what causes all these problems, this mass immigration that the American administration have kindly notified our European leaders that it is mass immigration that is the threat to our way of life, not Russia. Continuing here, one has to think about whether one should offer refugees access to German citizenship as quickly as possible. If they are German nationals, there is no limit to family migration. Then any possibility of controlling these migration flows has passed. This is a dramatic perspective, he said. So I would say he's confusing it there. He's saying if they are German national, what he really means is if they are German citizens. A German national should really mean part of the German nation, and the word nation comes from the word natal, which means birth. So the German nation is a group of German people that are all related to one another through birth, not related to one another through the piece of paper that they have that says that they're German. If you just have a piece of paper, then you're a German citizen. And the same in whatever nation you're from. Koopmans stressed that there must be a reckoning over what the actual purpose of refugee schemes are, saying that in contrast to regular immigration, in which the country actively seeks to recruit foreign talent, asylum schemes should mostly be temporary in nature, and that those who are in the country for only a few years should ultimately be told to go back to their homelands, as has similarly been proposed by figures like Brexit boss Nigel Farage in the UK. And this is the issue, isn't it? When you get refugees or asylum seekers, they're fleeing from their own country because they claim that the people in their own country are after them. And in a lot of these cases, it's because they've broken the laws in their own country. Those laws may not be laws in Britain. Like, for instance, in Africa, you have laws where it's against the law to be a sodomite. And what they can do then is they can come to Britain and say, oh, well, I'm homosexual and that's why I'm claiming asylum. But in actual fact, what they've actually done is they're fleeing from breaking the law in their own country. And that's just for one instance. And you know, I was told by when I was out in one of these Muslim countries, and I got quite friendly with the Muslims there, street musicians. And I said, well, what's diaspora like? What are your people like in my country? And they said, we have nothing whatsoever to do with them. They're all the people that we don't want. They're all the people that are in trouble over here for thieving or robbery or whatever. And they've fled from our country and they've ran away to yours. Don't have anything to do with them. And that comes from the horse's mouth. That came from street musicians in a country that I visited, in a Muslim country that I visited before I was a nationalist. So then be treating them as if they're the same as the people that have come into the country because they've got qualifications and we've asked them to come into the country to fill job positions that we don't actually have. To then conflate that as the same as somebody who's come in as an asylum seeker is wrong. Especially with refugees. It is mostly about people from countries with very patriarchal, traditional family structures where the expectation is much greater that there will be an extensive succession migration through marriage. This is not very important in politics at the moment, but if you look at the longer-term look, That should worry us, he said. Well, it's worrying us nationalists, and we've been talking about it for a long time, but we just get accused of being racist when we bring this up. And when other people bring it up, they just get accused of being far right, and we all get lumped in the same boat together, and we get told that we're just a far right bandwagon, and that we're just hijacking these issues. As if you're a nationalist, you wouldn't be concerned about these issues. That always gets me when they say patriotic alternative are just hijacking a local issue, and the local issue is immigration. If you're a nationalist, immigration is the biggest problem, isn't it? Because it's replacing your group with members of another group. Furthermore, Krugman's noted that not all migrant populations are equally able to integrate into German society, and that certain groups are significantly overrepresented in crime, particularly those from countries like Afghanistan and Syria. And considering Syria, they've got 1 million of them from Syria, we know what the crime statistics are for Afghans. They're over 20 times more likely to rape or sexually assault women than white people are. And Eritreans are the same from Africa. They're very high as well. And again, this is something that nationalists have been saying for a long time. But now the statistics are out there, and still we see the establishment pretending these statistics don't exist or that they're biased in some way. Usually what they'll do is they'll say, oh yes, but it's only a small number of them that do that. The vast majority of people that carry out these crimes are white people. And you say, well, yes, but it's their percentage of the population. If, say, it's only 1 in 1,000 white men is a rapist, but it's 20 in 1,000 of Afghans, then that means they're 20 times more likely to rape than white people, doesn't it? It's not about the actual numbers there. It's the proportion for their percentage of the population. This is something that a lot of left people have difficulty understanding. People are not fleeing for nothing, either because their countries are economically dysfunctional, because there is war, or because of oppression. These are dysfunctional states, and the people who come from these states usually do not have the education, knowledge, and experience necessary to be successful on the German labour market. This explains why these groups are so overrepresented in social assistance statistics, he said. And again, we do point this out, but then we get told that we're just hating on them because of their skin colour. We're not hating on anybody because of a skin colour. We're looking at statistics and pointing out that statistics show that these people are going to have difficulty integrating into Western societies for exactly the reasons that it says here. They usually do not have an education. They're certainly not going to be able to speak English, the majority of them. You might get a small minority that are highly educated, that have been to university, but then they're not going to be refugees, are they? They're going to be people that are coming through a normal migration route. And the fact that these states they have created are dysfunctional should be a real cause for concern for us, because it means that if you get a majority of them in an area, that area is likely to become dysfunctional as well. In addition to rolling back the ability of refugees to qualify for citizenship, the migration expert pointed to plans of establishing repatriation hubs in third-party countries for illegal migrants, as has been done by the Trump administration in the United States with El Salvador, and which Giorgia Meloni's government in Italy is currently battling the EU courts to establish in Albania. Of course, that's also the policy that the Tories had. They were going to put the refugees in Rwanda. But the problem with that policy was that they kept talking about it as if it was some kind of punishment. It wasn't a punishment. They would have been well looked after in Rwanda. They would have had help with sorting out businesses. A lot of them actually come from Africa in the first place, so it would be another country that is similar to their own with similar cultures, similar customs. They would have had their own place to live. They would have got business grants. They would have done very well out of it, but the Tory party kept referring to it as if it was some kind of punishment. And of course, with white people's pathological altruism, we don't want to be punishing people, especially if some of these people are actual genuine refugees. We don't want to be punishing them. So I think the problem with why that policy didn't take off is simply because of the way that it was framed. Although there has yet to be any repatriation hub scheme enacted in Europe, Koopman said that there may be signs of hope, with signals of support from Berlin being critical to moving the bloc as a whole to adopting such policies. Until now, the choice was very limited, and people were forced to negotiate with Turkey or Tunisia. Now we have a much wider range of possibilities and can make better arrangements without making ourselves dependent on a country. This is an enormous progress. Well, I do see us making progress in all of these issues, largely, I think, because of the Trump administration has opened these things up, so we're able to talk about them without being accused of being racist. And as I say, one of the problems that comes because of these large numbers of migrants coming into our countries is that we don't actually have the resources to keep them here. We don't have the houses. Our sewage system is overflowing into the rivers because there's more sewage than we can cope with. We've got classrooms that are overflowing with students because we haven't got the room in the schools to keep them all. We've got waiting lists in the hospitals and to see the doctors because we haven't got enough room for them all. And the most visible sign of this is with housing. And there was recently, I saw a tweet that was put out by the Migration Watch Committee in Britain. And it was saying something like 40 or 50% of all the council housing in London is taken up by people who were not even born in Britain. 40 to 50%. And you think how long it takes people to actually get housed by the council. And that's people that are here legitimately. Now we've got the Labour government that wants to put asylum seekers in council homes. And this article comes from GB News. And the headline is, asylum seekers to be housed in newly built council homes in push to end the use of hotels. And I think this is just going to wind people up just as much as putting them in hotels did. I mean, it's one step worse, isn't it? Because it means that they're actually taking your home away from you to give it to an asylum seeker. At least when they were being put up in hotels, you weren't expecting to live in that hotel, were you? But you might very well be expecting to live in a council house, and you might be on the council house list. And what they're going to do now is they're going to give those council houses to these asylum seekers. Five councils are said to have confirmed their interest in the scheme already. Asylum seekers are to be housed in newly built council homes as part of the government's push to end the use of migrant hotels. Brand new houses they're going to be given. Up to 200 local authorities are said to be keen on the scheme, while five councils, Labour-run Brighton and Hove, Hackney, Peterborough and Thanet, along with Labour Liberal Democrat-run Powys, have confirmed their interest, according to the I paper. Well, that's a lot more than just five councils, isn't it? Up to 200 local authorities now are interested. The pilot scheme would see £100 million in additional funding for the building of new properties or for the refurbishment of old derelict buildings in order to house asylum seekers. And that doesn't mean they'd be put in old derelict buildings. It means that they would be done up and it would be as if these buildings are brand new. They'd have new carpets, new bathroom, new kitchen, all painted, double glazing, insulation. It would be the equivalent of them living in a brand new house, effectively. Some council bosses are said to be keen on renationalising asylum accommodation. How can you renationalise it as if it was nationalised in the first place? Renationalising asylum accommodation rather than private contractors and welcome the prospect of adding more properties to their portfolio. Well, they shouldn't be paying private contractors either to house them, really, should they? I mean, I guess that's what they mean here by renationalising. It's not renationalising. They mean nationalising the cost rather than paying it out to private contractors in these homes of multiple occupancy. But the decision is expected to be met with fury by those who feel extra money spent on social housing should be for local residents. Last year, 1.33 million people were on a waiting list for social housing in England, the highest number since 2014. 20,000 social homes were lost in 23 to 24, primarily through right to buy sales and demolitions. Well, England is expected to sell off eight times as many council homes in 25-26 as were built in the previous year. In London, only about 5% of those on the waiting list have any chance of being rehoused, according to a City Hall inquiry, and in some boroughs the average wait for a family home is up to 15 years. So if you're white, you have to wait 15 years. If you're not white and you just came in on a boat, you'll get given a brand new house straight away. That appears to be what they're saying here. The new scheme will allow councils to buy more properties, such as new housing developments where homes are struggling to sell for asylum seeker accommodation. So new properties, I mean, people might have bought these properties. We're talking about private places that have been built on estates. They could end up with asylum seekers living next door because the council could just purchase the house next door. Properties would then be leased to the Home Office and eventually added to the council's own social housing stock with a view of saving money in the long term. There are currently 36,000 asylum seekers in hotels and around 71,000 accommodated in the private rented sector, a total of over 100,000. So much as people are complaining about the ones in hotels, there's twice as many as that that have already been put in private housing. And if they're going into private housing, it means that there's less private housing for everybody else. And if they're now going to add them to the council list, you know, if you actually live here and you're unable to get somewhere through private housing and you get put on the council list, what they're now saying, because of this, because there aren't enough private places to rent now because they're all full of asylum seekers, they're now going to put the asylum seekers on the council list as well, and at the top of the list. So it's going to make it even harder for an Indigenous British person to get housed. Due to a huge surge in anti-immigration protests across the country, Labour have pledged to abolish the use of hotels as asylum accommodation. That's the incredible thing, isn't it? They think this is going to be a real winner. Oh, we're going to get them out of the hotels. We're going to put them into your council houses now instead. I want to close those asylum hotels as quickly as possible, Sir Keir Starmer told GB News last month. We need to get the number down. I'm determined to close all migrant hotels. But he won't do that by sending them back, will he? The government initially turned to army barracks with two sites set to open in Crowborough, East Sussex and in Inverness. A total of 900 migrants are set to be housed across both locations. Well, that's just 1% of them, isn't it? But with over 100,000 migrants the Home Office is responsible for, it is local authorities who want to take on some of the job. Yeah, I bet they're really keen to take on the job. Some £100 million has been set aside to either build new housing or restore empty properties. The figures suggest that this would be enough to build 900 homes. So that's another 1% of them housed. So where are the rest of them going to go? Of course, they're not going to go into these brand new homes, are they? They're going to go into the council houses that we already have once some of those become available. With an estimated 200 councils interested in the scheme, Bella Sankey, leader of Brighton and Hove City Council, told the Eye paper that the current asylum housing system was inefficient in allowing taxpayers' money to be creamed off for handsome profits by private companies. And that is a good point. The money that gets paid out for in benefits to people that live in council properties, the money actually goes back to the council. It comes out in the housing benefit to the tenant, and then the tenant pays it to the council, pays that housing benefit to the council. When they have people in private properties, the housing benefit goes to the tenant, and then it goes to the private landlord. So it is a much better way of doing things to actually have people housed by the council, but that should be for the Indigenous Britons. That shouldn't be for asylum seekers, quote unquote asylum seekers, undocumented migrants that have broken into the country just with a handout, basically expecting to be fed and housed. Owning more of our own housing that can be used much more flexibly in future would be a win-win, she told the paper. It would be far better to invest in local authorities or build or buy stock rather than money going out of the door to private contractors, private landlords, or to hotels. So she's not concerned about the fact that this is going to people from outside of the country at all. All she's concerned about is saving a little bit of money for the council and getting the money going back to the council. She's not concerned at all about the fact that this is going to disadvantage her own people group. It's going to disadvantage her own constituents in Brighton. She said, I think that over time, this could replace entirely the need for private contractors to have any role in the system. Each local authority could be asked to step up and do their bit. Well, how about just doing that anyway for the Indigenous British? Why do we have to do that for so-called asylum seekers? Why can't we just do that anyway? I mean, surely it would make sense to do that. Well, I did say I've got one other article that I want to look at. And again, this is the result of multiculturalism. And this comes from the Dallas Express. Alarming rate of black-on-white homicides flagged by Watchdog's comprehensive database. The Watchdog group, National Conservative, has launched a comprehensive project to track interracial homicides in the United States, compiling a growing database with over 2,600 confirmed incidents from 23 to 24. The initiative, which began in December 23, aims to provide a detailed account of such crimes, categorizing them by the race of both the perpetrators and the victims. The database is intended to offer valuable insights into the patterns and frequency of interracial killings, making it a resource for public analysis. And we have a little tweet here. Major accounts are passing around a screen capture with data from National Conservative's Interracial Homicide Tracking Project. It has millions and millions of views now. However, none of them are posting the source or the link. So we will post the source into the Radio Albion article here. And the screen cap says the 2024 numbers are in. Blacks killed 458 whites. Whites killed 84 blacks, and the United States is 13.7% black and 58.4% white. That means blacks are 23 times more likely to kill a white person than white people are to kill a black person. So again, we have these statistics that back up what we're saying. Each entry includes specific details about the incident, such as images and case summaries. This effort has sparked attention online, with users engaging in discussions about the data and its implications for understanding crime in the United States. Well, I would say all you would really need to do is look at that to say, well, segregation is a failure, isn't it? All those white people killed by blacks and all those black people killed by whites, all of them would still be alive if America was still segregated. If you still had separate communities, then interracial killings couldn't occur. And the circumstances which lead to these interracial killings just wouldn't be possible. The National Conservative regularly updates the database as new cases are confirmed, ensuring the information remains current. In addition to its public-facing database, the project seeks to create a searchable tool that allows users to access and examine the data easily. While the project has generated both support and criticism, it represents a significant attempt to document and analyze a sensitive issue in American society. National Conservatives' initiative is expected to grow as it adds more records and expands its research into the coming years. For those interested, the database is accessible on their website, providing a detailed look at the complex dynamics of interracial homicide. Now, it's a shame that these people had to do that and the government isn't doing it. This is the sort of thing that we need to have in these multicultural societies that we now have, so we can actually see the statistics, so we can see the end results of our government's immigration policies, because it's not just the lack of housing. It's not just the worry of seven times as many of these people coming once they're made citizens. It's also the fact that they're 20 times more likely to kill you than one of your own group is. And that's what these statistics are saying. Of course, critics may say, well, these are American statistics. But most of the time, these statistics that we see in America, they're pretty similar in all the other multicultural countries. For instance, if you take the number of black people that are incarcerated for violent crime, it's pretty much always 4 to 5 times their percentage of the population, regardless of which country you actually look at. And in Britain, you can just look at the David Lammy report, which I'm often refer to, but you only have to look at the statistics there to see this discrepancy. So, I mean, basically, it's just all in all, multiculturalism and mass immigration is not good for a country, but we are forced to have it because of our economy system, because our economy is based upon usury. That's the source of all this. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.